Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. I hope all of you had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday, and this week, if you're feeling thankful and would like to give back on Giving Tuesday to help us continue to bring you news that matters in East County, you can donate at eastcountymedia.org to support our reporting on news in the public interest, or to knsj.org to sustain people-powered radio in our region. Again, those sites are eastcountymedia.org and knsj.org. Today, we open our show with some national news stories from Public News Service, including new travel restrictions due to a COVID variant first found in South Africa, updates on what the infrastructure bill means for communities, and a look at the Supreme Court's pending case on abortion rights. Next up, hear about power outages that affected many communities across East County over Thanksgiving, and how some hardy local residents saved their holiday feasts with some old-fashioned ingenuity, while others voiced complaints over SDG&E pulling the plug during the holidays due to high fire danger. Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs spent her Thanksgiving visiting our troops overseas, and we'll have details. A 12-year-old La Mesa student was killed by a stray bullet at his aunt's Skyline home over the holiday weekend. And in Spring Valley, two families lost their homes due to a fire started by a barbecue left unattended. Today we'll have some tips for you on choosing a Christmas tree and keeping it fresh, as well as some pet holiday safety tips. We have some good news to report. Monarch butterflies are making a comeback in California after an alarming decline last year. We also have some tragic news of our own to report, the loss of KNSJ's first news director, Mike Hancock, also known to many as a traffic reporter on other local stations. In his memory, we'll be replaying our On the Road in Santee Lakes episode featuring Mike with his well-known sense of humor. He will be deeply missed by us all. We'll also be re-airing Raina Menashe's interview with local author Bill Swank on baseball and Santa Claus. And finally, on Destination East County, hear about lots of festive holiday happenings coming up across San Diego's inland region. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We don't know a lot about the variant, except that it is a great concern.
To stem the spread of the Omicron variant, President Joe Biden announced that starting today, the U.S. is restricting travel for non-U.S. citizens from South Africa and seven other countries. Cases of the mutated COVID-19 virus have been confirmed in more than a dozen nations. Biden again encouraged Americans to get vaccinated.
We always talk about whether this is about freedom. I think it's a patriotic responsibility.
Conservatives say Biden accused former President Donald Trump of racism and xenophobia for enacting similar travel bans in 2020. But Dr. Anthony Fauci warned that the variant could create a fifth wave of COVID-19 infections and also brushed off his critics as being anti-science. That includes Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul, who again pressed Fauci over his knowledge of gain-of-function research, where a lab intentionally makes a virus more deadly.
You won't admit that it's dangerous, and for that lack of judgment, I think it's time that you resign.
Fauci said no gain-of-function research took place with this virus. Others have called that charge a conspiracy theory. Tomorrow, President Biden heads to Minnesota to promote the recently signed $1.2 trillion infrastructure law. During the Thanksgiving break, many members of Congress touted the benefits of the law back home, including California Democrat Barbara Lee. She told union workers that underinvestment in infrastructure made economic and racial inequality worse.
Too often, the infrastructure that we built created more inequality. This infrastructure law now advances equality, equity, environmental justice, unlike any law that we have ever seen before.
The House is back in session tomorrow. Today, the Senate convenes to work on the National Defense Authorization Act. The Department of Justice is considering a charge of contempt against former Trump Chief of Staff Mark Meadows for ignoring a subpoena from the January 6th Select House Committee. Former Trump strategist Steve Bannon recently pleaded not guilty to contempt of Congress for refusing to appear.
Not just Trump people and not just conservatives. Every progressive and every liberal in this country that likes freedom of speech and liberty, okay, should be fighting for this case.
Bannon, Meadows, and other Trump allies cite executive privilege for their lack of cooperation. The nationwide right to abortion is at the center of a case before the Supreme Court this Wednesday. A Mississippi law bans all abortions after 15 weeks, before fetal viability. Catherine Colbert argued the 1992 Supreme Court case Planned Parenthood v. Casey, which she explains established the right to choose abortion up to viability.
Any restriction that is less than that places the question, is Roe versus Wade still the law of the land, before the court. It is my view that they are going to say no, and they are going to again permit states to ban abortion.
In a recent poll by the Washington Post and ABC, 60% of Americans said they believe the Roe v. Wade decisions should be upheld. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy online at publicnewsservice.org.
Over 5,000 SDG&E customers were left in the dark on Thanksgiving Day after the utility shut off power to prevent wildfires. The National Weather Service had issued a red flag warning due to high winds and dry conditions. The outages affected many rural and mountain communities, including Alpine, Boulevard, Descanso, Jamul, Potrero, Warner Springs, and several Native American reservations. Some power remained off on Black Friday, but all electricity was restored by late Friday night. The utility sent warnings of possible outages to over 50,000 rural and mountain residents, but thankfully limited the scope of actual shutoffs to about 10% of those warned. But the prospect of no power on a traditional day of family feasting forced many to scramble to make alternative plans. East County residents posted comments and complaints on social media regarding the outages. While some railed against SDG&E for cutting power on a holiday, others pre-cooked foods early, grateful for the warnings. Some dined out at restaurants, brought in hot meals, or headed to relatives' homes outside the blacked-out areas. Some also voiced thanks that no homes were lost to wildfires. Left without power in Potrero, Fran Cooper Matera still managed to craft a holiday meal by hooking her stove up to a generator and serving the holiday feast by lantern light. On Facebook, she wrote, "A unique year, Thanksgiving dinner by lantern light as we had no power, also no water to wash up anything. Still in deep gratitude." Kim Hamilton, editor of the Deerhorn Valley Antler south of Jamul, made the best of the situation and kept things in perspective. Her household postponed its Thanksgiving feast due to outage warnings. She wrote, "I was glad to have the 1 to 2 day notice we did. While most of us are pretty self-reliant during power outages, it's the fire danger that is most worrying. So we spent Thanksgiving doing what we could to remove all flammable items away from the house and garage." But Charles Barranco in Santee wrote, "What SDG&E and PG&E are allowed to do is so wrong. No other state would allow this." He added in his Facebook rant, "All they care about is any liability. Happy Thanksgiving, which it won't be if you have to cook your turkey on a Coleman stove." Donna Tisdale in Boulevard wrote in an email to our media outlet, "Thankfully, my family has a generator so we can still cook our Thanksgiving dinner, but it is not cheap to fill up generators these days." However, Tisdale lamented, "SDG&E only has backcountry resource centers open in Descanso and Potrero. They shut our power off on Thanksgiving Day, but folks in Boulevard and Hacumba are expected to drive 20 miles or more one way in high winds to get to a resource center." She said residents have previously asked SDG&E to open up the Boulevard Community Center during outages, but the utility declined. Murphy Smith, a Boulevard resident, did visit an SDG&E resource center and voiced disappointment with the result after driving 30 miles. Smith shared a photo of the supplies SDG&E provided for a family of four during the multi-day outage. It included water, junk food snacks, and a bag of ice that she said was little help to keep a refrigerator full of food safe on a holiday weekend, let alone feed the family. The community resource centers set up by the utility did also include charging stations for people to power up cell phones and personal computers. Smith sums up the sentiments of many backcountry residents subjected to repeated outages during high winds, stating, "SDG&E has made ungodly amounts of profit, which could have been put into improving the infrastructure, and only started turning the power off during high winds after they had to start facing the liability of the wildfires they are responsible for." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
San Diego Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs served Thanksgiving lunch to American service members stationed in South Korea as part of an official congressional delegation trip to Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan. Later in the day, Jacobs and her colleagues also celebrated with U.S. veterans living in South Korea. Earlier in the week, Congresswoman Jacobs also met with service members and veterans in Okinawa, Japan, with government officials in South Korea, and toured the Demilitarized Zone, or DMZ. Congresswoman Jacobs, a member of the House Armed Services Committee and House Foreign Affairs Committee, says she felt honored to spend Thanksgiving with veterans and service members in South Korea. On Twitter, she added, "We ask so much of our military families, especially over the last year and a half during COVID. With so many not being able to travel home to see family, I felt that it was important to come and bring a little bit of home to them. I'm thankful for the opportunity to show them our gratitude this holiday season." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Marie Johnson.
12-year-old Angel Gaspar Gallegos, a student at Parkway Middle School in La Mesa, was killed on Thanksgiving night by a bullet while playing with cousins in his aunt's backyard on Cahill Drive in the Skyline neighborhood. San Diego Fire and Rescue responded to render aid to the boy, who suffered trauma to his upper body. He was rushed to UCSD Medical Center, where he died. The loss is doubly tragic for his parents, who lost an infant daughter 14 years ago. She died during heart surgery, according to the boy's aunt, Maria Gaspar, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. The family has two other children, Gabrielle and Brianna, Angel's younger siblings. Jose Casillas, the boy's uncle, told NBC San Diego, "We were supposed to be celebrating Thanksgiving like everyone else, but this incident changed all our lives forever." There are currently no suspects in the deadly shooting, which San Diego Police Department homicide officers are investigating. Casillas implored the public to come forward with information on who fired the fatal shots. He said, "I don't even think this was intentional, there's no way, but we do need to find out who did it, because intentional or not, they devastated my family." The family has set up a GoFundMe account to help pay for Angel's funeral costs and hospital expenses. The page is titled, "Please Help Our Angel Rest in Peace." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is the time of year when many people will be picking out this year's Christmas tree. Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, a columnist at East County Magazine, offers these safety tips to keep in mind when you choose your tree and throughout the holiday season. Pick a tree with fresh green needles that do not fall off when touched. Before placing the tree in the stand, cut 2 inches from the base of the trunk. Be sure the tree is at least 3 feet away from any heat source, such as fireplaces, radiators, candles, heat vents, or lights. And be sure the tree is not blocking an exit. Add water to the tree stand daily. Keep pets from drinking tree water, and don't add toxic tree preservatives to the water, which can kill cats or dogs. Prevent trees from falling if you have pets by tying it to the ceiling with clear fishing twine and a cup hook. Use tree lights that are listed by a qualified testing laboratory for indoor use. Replace any string of lights with worn or broken cords or loose bulb connections. Read manufacturer's instructions for the number of light strands to connect to avoid risk of fire. Never use lit candles to decorate the tree, and always turn off Christmas tree lights before leaving home or going to bed. After Christmas, get rid of the tree as soon as possible or whenever it becomes dry. Dried-out trees are a fire danger and should not be left in the home or garage or placed outside against the house. Do not burn your dried-out Christmas tree in your fireplace or wood stove, since pine wood can pop and spread sparks. Instead, check with your local community to find a recycling program, and you can even take home a load of pine mulch at some locations. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Western Monarch butterfly appears to be pulling back from the edge of extinction, with more than 100,000 counted so far in the 25th annual Western Monarch Thanksgiving count. This week, more than 100 butterfly enthusiasts are creeping around groves early each morning, counting the iconic orange and black Western Monarch. And they're finding large clusters from Los Angeles to Santa Cruz. Emma Pelton with the Xerces Society says it's unclear if the rebound is due to natural variability or something else.
They move and migrate over such large areas that it's hard to know exactly what weather conditions or environmental factors affected things in any one spot. But we think this is a good example of resiliency.
People who spot a large cluster of monarchs are encouraged to report it on the app iNaturalist so scientists can go check it out. Gardeners also can help the species by reducing pesticide use and by planting the butterfly's favorite flowering bushes, such as native narrowleaf milkweed and other flowers that bloom year-round. While it's good news that the numbers are up, Pelton cautions they are still dangerously low, representing more than a 90% drop from the number of monarchs that overwintered in California in the 1980s.
We would really like to see 500,000 butterflies. We'd like to see 1 million butterflies, which is more of the historic size that we saw in the 90s, not that long ago.
The Biden administration's new infrastructure bill, passed last week, dedicates $10 million over 5 years for projects to benefit monarchs by planting native flowers, adopting pollinator-friendly land management practices, and removing non-native vegetation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Two homes in Spring Valley were destroyed by a fire started from a propane barbecue grill over the Thanksgiving weekend. According to Andy Lawler, division chief for San Miguel Fire and Rescue, the grill was left unattended at a home on San Bernardino Avenue where it ignited wood siding and soon spread to a neighboring house. The blaze caused an estimated $2 million in damages by the time firefighters extinguished the flames. Battling the fire proved challenging due to low water pressure and hoses extended 800 feet up a hill, and the flames burned for hours. One firefighter fell through the floorboards as the fire destabilized the structure, but fortunately, no lives were lost. The neighbor's house that burned was owned by Wesley Scott and Sally Williams, who were on vacation at the time. The home where the fire started was owned by Robert and Cynthia Hathcock, who have lived there for 40 years. Their daughters, Natalie and Danilyn Barber, have started a GoFundMe account to help their family with cleanup and rebuilding. The family is devastated, according to the daughters, who say their family lost everything, including childhood photos, wedding albums, clothes, family heirlooms, furnishings, and their father's accounting business records. You can find a link to their GoFundMe page on our site at eastcountymagazine.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Marie Johnson reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ. Mike Hancock, traffic reporter for several local radio stations and former news director here at KNSJ Radio, was found dead in his San Diego residence by a friend on November 14th after an illness. Mike helped found KNSJ, where he served as a station's first news director, training interns and aspiring reporters on radio reporting and production skills. Martin Eder, founder of KNSJ Radio and its parent nonprofit, Activist San Diego, says Mike loved the idea of people-powered radio. KNSJ staff, volunteers, donors, and listeners are saddened to report that we lost one of our founders and a beloved friend of non-commercial nonprofit radio. Mike's voice has also been heard on the East County Magazine radio show, where he was instrumental in mentoring interns and reporting on locations in East County. If you've tuned in to a rush hour traffic report, you've likely also heard his voice as traffic reporter for many years at KPBS, as well as traffic and weather anchor at iHeartMedia News, and as news and traffic reporter for Kogo Radio. A seasoned journalism professional, Mike studied at the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication at Arizona State University after studying radio broadcast journalism at San Diego City Community College. He was a music minor at Cal State University East Bay, a student at San Diego City College, and a graduate of De Anza High School. Mike's passions also included volunteering as a Canyonlands community cleanup leader, an avid gardener, cyclist, alternative transportation advocate, LGBTQ rights promoter, environmentalist, cat lover, and a social justice proponent. In addition, Mike produced one of the first locally curated music shows on KNSJ and became known to friends as DJ Mike. Martin Eder recalls, the most outstanding quality that Mike brought to KNSJ was his deep humanitarianism. He was always a positive spirit, eager to help and working for the common good. Mike was as kind and considerate a human as you will ever meet. Miriam Raftery, host and producer of the East County Magazine radio show, voiced sadness at the loss of a friend and colleague. Mike was a wonderful mentor with a great sense of humor, she recalls. He was also a vital source over the years for our East County wildfire and emergency alerts, frequently sending tips he received as a traffic report on breaking news of local emergencies. He will be greatly missed. Other friends and colleagues shared memories on social media. Chris Martinez, executive producer at iHeartMedia Inc., said he was shocked at news of Hancock's passing. "We just loved to laugh, and he was such a great person to be around," he wrote. "Shocked to hear," wrote Christy Jagger of the Jagger and Christy team on Magic 92.5 radio. "Mike was the best and the most kind human ever. He will be dearly missed by all." In his memory, now we'd like to play one of our vintage Best of East County episodes featuring Mike Hancock and our producer Miriam Raftery taking you on the road at Santee Lakes.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
So we're here at Santee Lakes, and we're at the Spray Ground. This looks like fun. Yeah, Miriam?
It does. There's lots of little kids in there splashing around, getting all wet.
And why don't we have one of these for adults?
Good idea, Mike.
Looks like fun.
It does.
Hello, I'm Mike Hancock. We're on the road in East County. We're here with Jonathan Skinner with Santee Lakes. How you doing, Jonathan?
I'm doing good, Mike. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for taking some time out to talk to us today and tell us all about what's happening at Santee Lakes.
We're really excited about our property and what we do here. We're a community asset. We've been out here since over 50 years offering recreational opportunities for the community. And when I say the community, I'm not just talking Santee. I'm talking about La Mesa and El Cajon and Alpine. They're part of that 750,000 people that we have come here every year.
That's a lot of people coming to Santee Lake. So, Jonathan, can you take us back to the beginning of Santee Lakes and tell us how it all started?
When it was the Santee Water District, there was a challenge that we had. And basically, we do reclaim water. The Water District does reclaim water. But we were shipping it down to San Diego, and we had an opportunity either to maintain that or to find a way to handle the water ourselves. And Ray Stoyer, the general manager at the time, decided to make it a way that we can take care of recycled water here. And the recreation came as an afterthought. We started actually working with the environmental community to get it approved to have reclaimed water used for recreation. So that's really, really exciting.
So it's a green operation, the reclamation of the water?
Yeah, we actually have a very big plant north of us, and it recycles 2 million gallons of water a day.
This is Miriam Raftery, and I understand this has become an international model. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, you know, when you look at reclaimed water, a lot of times they just take it and, you know, use it for irrigation and other sources. What we were able to do is find a way to make it for recreational use. When Ray Stoyer started this project back in the 50s and 60s, he was able to get approval to have limited contact with the water, but also use it for recreation. So if you take a look in our general store where we're just at, you'll see pictures of, we had sailboats. So we will be bringing back. Exactly when, I'm not sure, but we will be bringing that back. We have fishing that started back then. We currently stock over 38,000 pounds of fish between trout and catfish a year.
You also added camping.
If you took pictures of our old campsite, it was very primitive. And now we're on, I would say, part of the state-of-the-art of camping. We went from under 100 sites to now over 300 sites. We've also included cabins. Three of them are floating, and seven of them are on shore.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the floating cabins.
It was a labor of love from our previous director, who is now our general manager, Alan Carlisle. He was approached, and the park was approached, from people who didn't have tents. They didn't have trailers, but they wanted to come camping. So through a lot of research and support from the board of directors, we found a way to have cabins, which are basically trailers that are stationary. We have them on Lake 7. It's absolutely beautiful. So three of them are floating cabins. We actually have a dock that goes up to them, and they're floating. And then we have seven land cabins.
So they're anchored.
They're anchored. No, they don't just travel around, which is a very good question, because when people ask the reserve and they say, well, am I going to be floating? You're going to be floating, but you're going to be stationary.
It'd be hard to get a good night's rest.
So you won't get seasick.
Well, we haven't had anybody get seasick yet.
What else is in your dream list there for Santee Lakes for the future?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, Miriam, because right now we're doing a master plan for the park. The last one we had, which was the 21-21 plan, came up with a lot of great opportunities and projects for us, which we completed. But currently what we're looking at is expanding our recreational opportunities. Some of the things that have been talked about is a zip line.
Hey.
We want to do some shore restoration, which is going to increase some of our picnicking opportunities, some retrofits that we have for the back of the park, upgrading things that have been here since not the beginning, but since the 70s.
They also have various things that you can rent to go see the lake.
Some of the amenities we've had for a couple of years is our pedal boats, which is really, really big. They either have it for two people or five people, and it's primarily right now on Lake 5, which our goal is to also put them on Lake 1. It's one of our biggest lakes. One of our newest additions that we got in 2012 are our Surreys and our bikes. Now, if you haven't seen a Surrey, there's a song about it with a Surrey on top. So it's a two-person or four-person bike, and you can actually fit as many as six adults and two kids up front. It's a great way to see the park up front, but it's also great exercise, and you'll be able to see that when you go out on it.
Right. Yeah, that sounds good.
And so we're going to take you on a tour and go pedal around the lake and look at some of the sights.
Okay, so we set off on the Surrey, and here we are at Santee Lake, driving around, and we're going the wrong way.
Not at the lake, though. How
do
we break it?
Oh, the brake's right here. If you see something bad about to happen.
Just yank it. Okay.
Yeah, cool. We want to go to the left. Is this the way we're supposed to go? So we're not supposed to go on the sidewalk. This thing really moves. Let me know if you want to drive.
Cool. Here we go.
I don't think we could go uphill anyway, even if we try.
We are on the road in Santee Lake.
We got a wave, too.
Yeah.
Oh, I think we're going to park it right here.
Jonathan, thank you very much for joining us today. And where can people get more information about Santee Lakes?
Well, they can go to our website, which is www.santeelakes.com, or they can visit us on Facebook and like us on Facebook, or they can call us at 619-596-3141.
We'll be back again next week with another edition of On the Road in East County.
A not-so-wily coyote has been rescued from inside a car bumper where it became trapped after being struck by a motorist. Though this may sound like a plot from a popular TV cartoon, no Roadrunners or Acme products were reported in the vicinity. Fortunately, the older female coyote is now back in the wild after treatment at the San Diego Humane Society's Ramona Wildlife Center. This amazing rescue was documented on video on November 1st when San Diego Humane Society's Humane Law Enforcement Team was dispatched to rescue an animal lodged in the bumper of a car in a San Marcos parking lot. The person who hit the coyote did not realize that she was stuck in his bumper and was inside a Ralph's grocery store when another shopper noted a dog in the bumper and called for help. The car's owner was alerted to the situation when he came out of the Ralph's. Humane officers were startled to learn that the dog was, in fact, a wild coyote. They called San Diego Humane Society's veterinary team to the scene to help monitor the coyote's well-being as she was cut out from inside the fender. Upon arrival at the Ramona Wildlife Center, the coyote could stand and walk. The veterinary team performed exams and x-rays to ensure that there were no fractures or internal bleeding. The coyote's teeth revealed her age as a senior, but according to Christine Barton, Director of Operations and Wildlife Rehab at the Humane Society's Ramona campus, the coyote was in wonderful condition for her age with a healthy weight and coat. The coyote spent 18 days at the Ramona Center receiving treatment for shock and a severely injured paw pad. Project Wildlife's medical team treated her with fluids, pain medication, and kept her under close observation as she recovered. The coyote was released in the late afternoon of November 18th in a park near the San Marcos location where she was found. Barton says, "We are so happy she recovered quickly and could be returned to her natural habitat." San Diego Humane Society's Project Wildlife program is a primary resource for wild animal rehabilitation and conservation education in San Diego County. Each year, SDHS gives a second chance to more than 13,000 injured, orphaned, and sick wild animals. The new Ramona campus opened in 2020 and specializes in caring for native apex predators and birds of prey, including hawks, owls, eagles, coyotes, bears, bobcats, and mountain lions. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering Get trained to be a citizen journalist and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
And next up, we'll be playing one of our Best of East County episodes, our interview with author Bill Swank on baseballs and Santa Claus.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing author Bill Swank to discuss the release of his new book, Christmas in San Diego. My guest has a diverse resume. He's not only a baseball historian with 9 baseball books under his belt, but since 2002 he's been our much-loved Santa at Balboa Park's festive December nights. Baseball and Santa, often called the Baseball Santa. Welcome, Bill. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you. It's a lot of fun to be here.
Let's start with your new book, Christmas in San Diego. It takes the reader on a tour of the holiday in our region. So first, tell me how a baseball aficionado became so involved in Christmas in San Diego.
Well, the book came about because I've written a couple of books for Arcadia on baseball. And my editor was out here a couple of years ago, and he said, why don't you do a book on Christmas? And at the time, all I had really were pictures of myself. My only knowledge of Christmas was what I already knew. I began researching the history of Christmas in San Diego. I wanted to see how Christmas was celebrated in the various communities of San Diego. What are the traditions of Christmas in San Diego? I found a lot of pictures of trees, Christmas trees. Now, I thought that was fun, so that's a chapter. Mm-hmm. And then the final chapter is on Santa Clauses, because I really didn't know any other Santa Clauses. And the Santa Clauses I was looking for, I wasn't necessarily looking for, well, I purposely was not looking for mall Santas.
Right.
I'm looking for volunteer Santas.
Uh-huh.
And they're out there. They tell wonderful stories, and it's about the spirit that's in these people. And they can be men, they can be women. We're in the East County. There's a group in Santee called the Santee Santas, which I think is a great name. Started back in 1953 with the superintendent of schools and some teachers to make Christmas good for some kids that didn't have any money.
Oh.
Now there are over 200 members.
Really?
And they are, Santee Santas, I love the name. The point I try to make in the book is that they're all Santas and they want to give to others, and the Christmas spirit is about giving and being good to one another.
So you got involved with December Nights, and your editor sort of volunteered you to write this book. And then you started doing all the research. Is that right?
Well, it isn't that he volunteered. He asked me if I would do
you.
It. And I thought, yeah, that would be great, because the two have become intertwined in my life. I got the name Baseball Santa because I played for the House of David. It's a religious colony out of Benton Harbor, Michigan, and they had beards and long hair, and I'm the only Santa that's ever played for them. And they used to play against the Negro Leagues, and when I went back to the Negro Leagues draft 2008, when I hand out my card, people say, oh, you're Santa. And these former Negro League players, they all said, we thought you were probably with House of David.
Hmm. Well, you look like the most authentic Santa I've ever seen, like the original picture book.
I didn't know I was going to look like this. I was a skinny little kid.
Uh-huh.
And when you look like this, you get approached by, you can make good money being Santa Claus. So I was asked to be a Santa by a woman that takes photographs at Sears. What happened is my wife and I were at Hometown Buffet. I'm loading up my plate and I feel something on my leg. And I look down and it's a little tiny Mexican girl. She's got both arms wrapped around my leg. And when I looked down, she looked up, she said, I love you, Santa.
Oh, isn't it sweet?
And I pat her on the head and I said, I love you too, honey. And my heart just melted.
Uh-huh.
And a woman standing there says, that happened to you very often? I said, well, the older I get, the more it happens. Well, within that year, my wife and I were at a party at a neighbor's house, and two women approached and said, we want you to be our Santa. I said, I don't want to be Santa. But when they said it was for the Christmas Center in Balboa Park at the Orton Pavilion with the little dioramas mm-hmm. that tell the Christmas story, mm-hmm. They said they needed a Santa, and I took my kids there when they were little. And I thought, well, this is a way I can give back to the community. Mm-hmm. And I've been there Santa since 2002. This will be my 14th year. Mm-hmm. And I love it. It's wonderful. I'm very proud to be San Diego Santa.
And your writing of this book is a wonderful story, too, because it's Santa finding out more about the Golden Rule, as you say, here in San Diego. Give us another example, if you would, about the goodness that happens at this time in San Diego.
There's a group in National City of mm-hmm. bikers
yeah.
that give out free bicycles to poor kids in National City. They give out 200 a year. I met the man. He goes by the name of Snowball. He's got a beard and he's got a chopper. He's with a motor club,
the
Booze Fighters, as a matter of fact, is the name of their club. And he met a guy drinking beer. And when he found out this man, his name was King, that he was fixing up old bikes and painting them for poor kids down National City, he thought, well, I like to work on mechanical things and I like drink beer. So this goes back maybe 30 years, and he got these other bikers involved. So on Christmas, they have a parade down National City, and they've got Santa in a sidecar, and they give out these free bikes. Now, those guys are Santa Claus. Now, you may look at them and say, they're bikers, but they're Santa. And that's what I mean by there's so many unusual Santas in San Diego.
So you don't need to look the part, but all these people under the radar, they're doing these amazingly generous things.
Parents are Santa.
Right.
And the goodness that we have in us is Santa Claus, I say. Mm-hmm. I have no training as Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. I remember taking my kids to the mall and, you know, they wore the fake beards and they had the 1,000-yard stare and they didn't interact with the kids. I try to be the Santa I wish my kids could have visited. And I talk to the kids and I smile for all the pictures and I'm friendly with people. And yes, I am a little loud, but they like that. I was Santa for hospice until San Diego Hospice until they went bankrupt.
What was that like?
It was very difficult. The first day that I went out, I was very serious and I was a sober, somber Santa, and it wasn't much fun.
No.
And I wasn't doing much in the homes. And the more I loosened up and the louder and the jollier I got, the better it was. They told me, they said, you're going to bring joy in these families. And I thought, how can you? But the first year, a woman told me, this is the best Christmas we ever had, which shocked me.
That's amazing.
And a story I like to tell is about a little boy. Now, this little boy is in hospice. And you know what that means?
Uh-huh.
He came out to greet me. He was mobile. He said, Santa, I love you. I love you too. We go inside. He says, when I grow up, I want to be Santa Claus. This is a kid in hospice. He's 7 years old. He wants to be Santa when he grows up. So I said, why wait? I took off my hat. I took off my jacket and I put it on him. That's the picture that uh-huh. I just showed you. Uh-huh. This little boy with wearing my jacket and then my belt's wrapped around a couple times. He's got this big smile. He wants to be Santa when he grows up. And I said, why do you want to be Santa? And he says, I want to do nice things for other people. That kid was a Santa.
Yes.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yes, he was.
Here's a little boy with cancer, dying of cancer, and he's thinking about being good to other people. And that's what I hope the whole message of my book is, touching on that part mm-hmm. of San Diego. Appreciate all the wonderful people that we have in all the communities, all the volunteers that make Christmas a wonderful celebration for everybody else.
Right, because we have so much bad news in the news. It's nice to remember the good things that are there, even if
there's a lot of good in the world. There's a mm-hmm. lot of good in the world. People are getting upset about Christmas. Christmas is the celebration of the birth of Jesus. Santa Claus is not, you know, it's a secular figure. I'm not pushing any religious agenda. Mm-hmm. The golden rule, be good to others, that's my agenda.
And that's universal.
It is. It is.
Can you give us a Santa laugh? A ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho!
How about ho, 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 Merry Christmas?
Ho, 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 Merry Christmas, kids!
I love it. Okay, let's go back to your book and its honoring of diversity. You mentioned some unique decorations. Can you give us an idea, a glimpse at some of the decorations you've seen that are more unusual or more striking?
Well, diversity, you know, it's taken on a different term. You know, now they think of it, you know, it's kind of a racial and a gender term. Mm-hmm. And the diversity that I was addressing is San Diego County is very diverse just by its geography, by its size. So the book has Ocotillo Wells celebrating Christmas out in the desert, an unusual decoration. Out in Jacumba, they have a tumbleweed decorating contest.
And
last year, a seventh grade kid, I think he won $100 for a tumbleweed Santa and reindeer out in his front yard. Decorations that people have put up out in Canyon City, I think it is. It's out near Campo. There's nothing in Canyon City. Mm-hmm. And I went past, and there's a manger scene. And it's very simple. I mean, the rocks that were saying Canyon City, they've fallen off. But people are celebrating Christmas in so many ways. I write for the Claremont Times, and there's there are neighborhoods throughout San Diego County that decorate for Christmas. And they have names, like there's Candy Cane Lane down in Chula Vista, and there's Christmas cards, Penasquitos. Claremont always has this wonderful neighborhood light display, but it doesn't have a name. It's just called Jamar and Lana. Those are the drives. So I thought, this place needs a name. I found out that the man who started this, and this goes back into the 1970s, and he has just begun treatment for cancer. So this is kind of a tough time in his life. His name is Don Park. And so my column that'll be coming out in December, I'm proposing that the Claremont light display be called Claremont Christmas Park.
Perfect.
And so people won't know, they won't understand the park part, but everybody in the neighborhood will. So, but I mean, here's this guy. He told me how as a young father, his little boy, they went walking in the neighborhood, handing out flyers. Let's decorate for Christmas. And now it's one of the great Christmas decorations, a community that decorates. And if you live there, I've talked to the neighbors. They say, you got to get in by 4 o'clock because you ain't getting out.
Oh, I'd love to see it. Let's go back to December nights, because I know that that's a very beloved festival here in town. What does the experience, first of all, what's it like being in front of all those people? And then what does the experience bring to your holiday, your personal holiday?
Well, it used to be called Christmas on the Prado.
Okay.
It got changed in 2002 to December Nights in the Park. They used to get 50, 60,000 people, which is a lot of people.
Yeah.
Now they estimate that they get 300 to 350,000 people. And so it's become very commercial.
Oh.
Now, the display that is in the park, the original purpose was for it to be non-commercial. Now it's gone the other direction.
What do you mean by it's gotten commercial?
They're selling food. They're selling so many things.
Okay.
And I'm Santa Claus. I have no idea what's going on, because when you wear a red suit and you get out of your sleigh, mine being a car, kids see you and they start following you. And then I walk behind the organ pavilion, get to my chair. There's a long line waiting for me. And I see everybody in the line, and then they follow me back to my car. So I really don't know what happens.
Right. So the commercial part doesn't touch
you. Yeah. It's and there's so many families and kids that come back every year, and it's just so good to see them. And I tell people that when you're Santa, you operate on a stage. It's 2 feet square at the most. Kids are right in your face.
Sure.
And when they're looking at you, and you're Santa, and I have a real beard. In 2002, there weren't that many real beards. I remember kids touching my beard. I thought I'd get my beard pulled. I've never had a kid pull my beard.
No one ever tried to yank it off.
The only one that tried it, the only one that pulled my beard, I was on Scott and BR and their TV show. Mm-hmm. And Scott, he says he's Jewish. He says, I always wanted to pull Santa's beard. He pulled my beard. And I didn't like it.
No.
And I thought it was, he thinks he's a wise guy, but it was inappropriate, but that's his style. I've never had a kid pull my beard.
Wow. Okay. Let's go a little bit to your historian hat instead of your Santa hat. So what is the thing that you love to research the most in history? I guess about the city of San Diego, what is the most interesting historical fact that you've ever learned? Whether it be about baseball or Santa, any topic.
My first book was about the Lanefield Padres.
Okay.
And I wanted to learn about baseball before professional baseball came to town. So I spent a long time researching old newspaper articles. I went to the library. I was at the Historical Society. And there were a lot of stories that were told, and most of them were wrong, because it would be history that gets repeated, and a story gets written, say, in 1910, and it gets rewritten in 1930, and they change it a little bit, and everything keeps changing. So I went back and found the history of baseball in San Diego. And it was with Arcadia that they wanted me to do a book when Petco Park opened. And you can just write so much about baseball, and I wanted to do more. So the first book sold. So they let me do the early history of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was finding all the wonderful stories that happened before 1936 when the Padres came to town. As my wife knows, I just enjoy doing research and going to the library and going through the microfilm. And when you discover something new, which is really very old, it's just a lot of fun. It's very exciting.
And it sounds like no matter what you do, you're looking for those little stories.
Yes,
untold
yes.
Stories.
It's like you're on a trip. I was at the library once, and the librarian said that she was going to a hockey game that night. And I said, "Is it hockey season?" She said, "I know your problem. You're lost in your research. I was back in the 1890s. You know, that happens when you get into research."
One last question. What are you writing next? Is it going to be more baseball, more Santa, more history? Give us a glimpse.
Well, let's ask my wife, what am I writing next? She has a lot of ideas of things I'd like to do. Getting published is not easy. And once you're published, publishers will contact you to want you to write stuff. I mean, like happened with this book. I originally thought I was going to write about my experiences as a probation officer.
And, oh, you were a probation officer. This
yes.
comes up at the end of the interview. Okay.
Yes. And people that worked for me or that I was their probation officer, they said, "I can't believe you're Santa Claus because I was never described as a jolly guy." People now that know me that they say, "Yeah, you're such a jolly guy." Well, I wasn't always a jolly guy.
So as a probation officer, you saw, let's say, a little bit of the darker side, and now you're focusing on the brighter side, it seems.
That's very true. That's very true. I'm an old guy now, and I'm enjoying life, and I'm very happy being Santa Claus, and I enjoy baseball. I don't like to get involved in political conversations, mm-hmm. and I say to people, "Let's talk baseball."
Right.
Or with you, let's talk Christmas.
And then you'll see what you work on next, whatever comes your way.
Well, I might do my book on probation. There was, in fact, it's East County Story. It was the greatest case I ever had, a man named Stuart Siegel. And he was involved with Barona Bingo back in the 80s. And he was just a famous con man. I mean, the guy did not spend one day of custody, and he had a rap sheet. I think it was 37 different states. He was an informant. And so he was always sliding by. I was a supervisor, so I was able to devote more time than a normal, a probation officer has a large caseload.
Mm-hmm.
And I made it my goal to get this guy, and I finally got him, and the FBI was hiding him out in the LAPD because he was a witness in the biggest homicide case before OJ in LA. He was a witness in that case. It was an LA cop that killed some people. It was called the Yom Kippur murders. Wow. Before that, it's called the Ninja murders.
Mm-hmm.
I tracked this guy down, finally found him, and he went to 5 years in prison. That's how I used to get my fun.
Okay.
And
now
it's being Santa. Yeah, I was not Santa that
time. Right. Wow. Well, you've had a fascinating story to tell us today. That's all we have time for. But thank you so much for joining us and telling us your stories.
Well, it's nice to be here, and Merry Christmas to everybody out there listening to us.
To check out Bill Swank's blog, please visit baseballsantaswank.wordpress.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
The
This week's Destination East County features many holiday happenings and seasonal festive favorites. The famous North Pole Limited returns to celebrate the holiday season at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo each Friday, Saturday, and Sunday now through December 18th. The fun starts at the lighted Campo Depot. Once aboard the North Pole Limited train, Santa's elves will sing favorite Christmas carols, read a popular Christmas story, and the North Pole Limited will stop at Santa's workshop to pick up Santa and Mrs. Claus, who will visit with all passengers on the train on its way back to the depot. For tickets and details, visit psrm.org. That stands for Pacific Southwest Railway Museum. What could be merrier than a holiday wine trail in the country featuring 17 local wineries? This year, the Ramona Holiday Wine Trail offers discount wine tastings each Saturday and Sunday at all these wineries now through December 19th. Advance reservations are required. For details and a link to purchase a Holiday Wine Trail passport, you can visit RamonaValleyVineyards.com. Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa provides a look into yesteryear with its presentation of the 1940s Radio Hour by Walton Jones, running now through December 19th. Through this nostalgic view of a live radio broadcast from the Hotel Astor's Algonquin Room on December 21, 1942, the audience will experience the spirit of that bygone era when the world was at war and pop music meant Strike Up the Band and Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy. Watch as the harassed station manager copes with a drunk lead singer, a delivery boy who wants a chance in front of the mic, the second banana cabbie who dreams of singing a ballad, and the trumpet player who chooses a fighter plane over Glenn Miller. For tickets, you can visit LamplightersLaMesa.com. The holiday season heats up in Lemon Grove with the city's 24th annual bonfire on Friday, December 3rd from 4:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Tragonza Heritage Park on Main Street. Guests are encouraged to dress warm and come out with the family to enjoy free hot chocolate and cookies, bring friends, and partake in activities including arts and crafts, a game truck, rock climbing, and live music. There will also be free hot chocolate and cookies for all, as well as other foods available for purchase. Santa will arrive by fire truck to cap off a two-day Christmas market and festival in Crest. The event will be held at the Crest Clubhouse in rural El Cajon on Friday, December 3rd from 3 to 8 p.m. and Saturday, December 4th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Santa will ride in on the fire truck on Saturday only at 4 p.m. and stay until 6. Throughout the two-day event, visitors can shop from vendors, enjoy food, raffles, door prizes, photo stations, and fulfill Christmas wishes for others on a wish tree. Tis the season for family fun, and Fort Cross Old-Timey Adventures in Santa Isabel invite you to enjoy a holiday hayride on December 4th and 5th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Hayride packages include the hayride, caroling, a hoedown jug band show, petting zoo, reptile show, seasonal crafts, and candle dipping. For tickets, you can visit fortcross.com. You're invited to an old-fashioned Christmas market at the Julian Mining Company on Saturday, December 4th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. This festive community event, open to all, features craft vendors, Christmas wreath making, and candle dipping. Plus, you can enjoy Julian Mine Company activities such as gem sluicing, gold panning, a miniature mine train ride, tomahawk throwing, a dig pit, and shopping at the general store. For more info, visit julianminingcompany.com. Mission Trails Regional Park has resumed its live hawk demonstrations on the first Sunday of every month. The next Hawk Talk will take place December 5th from 9 a.m. to noon, featuring falconer Bob Gordon, Mission Trails volunteer George Varga, and Huxley, a Harris hawk. For more information on this, you can visit mtrp.org. That's Mission Trails Regional Park. La Mesa's Holiday in the Village will ring in holiday cheer on Saturday, December 4th from noon to 9 p.m. along La Mesa Boulevard between Spring and 4th Streets in the downtown historic village. Festivities for this community event, open to all, include live music, cozy fire pits, craft vendors, food, holiday photo opportunities, and a kids' area bigger than Santa's toy shop. There will also be carnival games, carolers, bands, craft vendors, food and drinks from La Mesa local favorites. This honored tradition transformed the town into a winter wonderland for the whole family. You can find details at LaMesaVillageAssociation.org. Southern California's largest outdoor ice skating rink is now open for the holiday season through January 3rd. The rink at Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine invites you to enjoy the sights and sounds of the season with ice skating and holiday lights, entertainment, and a winter water show as well, all at the Viejas Outlet Center. The Outlets Mall also has visits with Santa and more holiday happenings. The rink is open daily, and skate rentals are available. You can find details at viejas.com/skating-rink. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
It's time to deck the halls for the holiday season, but some holiday decorations can pose safety hazards for your cat or dog. So San Diego County's Animal Service Department is offering these tips to protect your pet. Keep pets away from mistletoe, holly, and poinsettias, since these are toxic to animals. Consider using artificial holiday plants instead. Chocolate is toxic to pets, so keep stockings with chocolate treats out of reach, as well as any chocolate cookies you might leave out for Santa. Anchor your Christmas tree so pets can't tip it over. Clear fishing twine tied to the top of the tree and secured to a ceiling or wall is a simple way to keep your tree standing and protect your ornaments too. Never use tree preservatives in water in your Christmas tree stand, since this can be deadly if cats or dogs drink it. Cats love to play with tinsel and curling ribbon, but then they'll try to eat it. Tinsel is toxic and ribbon can obstruct your pet's intestinal tract. So keep these items away from curious critters. Hide electrical cords from your pets and make sure they can't play with or knock over any candles. Many dogs and cats get overwhelmed with all the hustle and bustle of the holidays, so having a quiet room allows them to escape and sleep undisturbed. On New Year's Eve, loud booms from fireworks can scare your canine companion. Some dogs will jump over fences to escape the noise. They run for miles and become lost. So set aside a safe, quiet place and be sure your dog is wearing identification just in case. Microchip both dogs and cats, since they slip out the door unnoticed while you're busy greeting holiday visitors. And if someone finds your lost pet, a vet's office or shelter can scan for a microchip and you can easily be reunited. County Animal Service offers low-cost microchipping every Tuesday through Sunday, which includes national registration. You can also sign up for Finding Rover and upload a photo of your pet using your computer or smartphone. This free service uses facial recognition to help lost and found dogs be reunited with their owners. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Chardé Fontenot.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.